This is Steve and Kathleen Nelson, and we are just starting this talk. You haven't missed anything yet. Just going to share Deuteronomy 6:6. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. And in that, I get an impression of Christianity in the home, of it being constant, just constantly giving input to our kids. They lie down as they get up when we're eating with them. And that's the type of atmosphere that we're trying to pass on to them. Revelation 3:16, Jesus says, "So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth." And we are doing everything we can to have a spiritually hot environment in our home. We don't want a lukewarm home. And you know what? Your kids do not want lukewarm Christianity. If they get lukewarm Christianity when they are teenagers, they're going to want to spew that out of their mouths just like Jesus would. We want to pass on to them a view of Christianity that's exciting and thrilling, and it's a part of everything they do. It's not just something that we do on Sunday morning. It's not just something that we do for 15 minutes every morning. But we want our beliefs to be woven through everything that we do.
One of the things just on the intentional part of it is I think one of the processes that has taken a while is that we've had to change our own lives in a lot of areas. And we knew that, you know, even when we were early married, we would sit into seminars like this and hear things, but there was an element where what it required was it required us changing as mom and dad and really making those sacrifices. So I think that's been some of the process of just realizing the significance of it, the importance of it, but also are we willing to do it? Are we willing to live in that way on a daily basis that we can impart this to our kids, not just by what we're saying, but by what we're acting? So there was some real intentional decisions that we had to make to die to ourselves and change our own things in our marriage and things in our home in order to impart this to our kids. So I think that's where some of the process has been.
So the first thing on your sheet there is family quiet times. Just to refer back to John's talk last night, you might remember the last point on the sheet, I believe it was, said, as a couple, be devoted to Scripture. Boy, it's easy to come up to a conference and hear something like that. Think, oh yeah, that's really important. Yeah, I need to read my Bible more. And then go home and, well, nothing really changes. And then you go to the next conference and you hear, oh yeah, you really need to read your Bible more. And you think, yeah, that's a good idea. And the reality is nothing's going to change unless you make a commitment to do something different. And in our home, this has been something that has developed over time. And it's gotten to a point now where it's like, wow, this is a huge thing in our home. A few years ago, I was never really a big family devotional person. It's one of those things you hear at a conference, right? And it's like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. But, you know, it's hard enough to have personal devotions, let alone try to pull other people into it, encourage them, and keep them going. So I just thought Kath and I would do our own thing, and the kids did their own thing, and that was working fairly well. But I don't remember exactly, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, some of the neighbor guys that either lived with us or lived close to us that were in our church started getting together in our living room, and we would just meet together, and we meet at 7 o'clock in the morning, pretty much, not every morning, but 5 mornings a week. We'd get together at 7, and then at 7:10 we would start our quiet time. And it would be informal. You could leave. You could go for a prayer walk. You could sit there and read your Bible, which is mostly what we do. Or you could pray or do whatever. But then at 7:50, so 40 minutes later, we'd come back together and just share whatever we'd been thinking about or praying about. And it was this really neat thing. But you know, pretty soon the kids would come down from breakfast and they'd be watching this. And my oldest, who's 12 now, he was probably, I don't know, maybe about 9 or 10 then. And he's like, well, Dad, can I be a part? It's like, well, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure if you're big enough yet. And so he kept pestering me until finally it's like, well, okay, we'll try it once and see how it goes. And so we tried it. And those first few weeks were a little bit obnoxious because he'd be sitting there and he'd be zipping and unzipping his Bible and ruffling through papers and dropping stuff and spilling stuff and sneezing. Yeah. And then we'd get to the end, he'd share his thought and he'd be like, no, that's not really doctrinally right, you know? And so it's a little bit of a process, but after a few weeks it's like, okay, this is going pretty well and this is a good thing. And then our next 2 years behind that, our girl Hope, she wanted to be a part. It's like, well, it's kind of a guy's thing right now. And well, after, I don't know, it was maybe at least 6 months, I said, well, Hope, sure, you can try. And so she tried, and she started being a part of it every morning. And about that time, I think we converted Kathleen, and she started coming. And and Silas, our next one, would come, and he would just sit there, and he'll read a little devotional. He's a pretty good reader for his age, but read a little devotional, and he'll just share one verse, maybe. And it's usually the one that they highlighted. And he'll write that down in his journal. And it's meaningful to the kids. They'll sit there and they'll pray for their friends. They'll pray for their school day and whatever's going on, and pray that they'll get a chance to share their faith and stuff like that. So it's been something in our home that's developed that now, look at it, it's like, wow, why weren't we doing this 5 years ago? I mean, this is really shaping our kids and us and really everything that we do.
So one of the things that we haven't done is we haven't made it real structured. The kids could read anything they want. If they want input, we'll give them input. We've bought a lot of little children's devotionals or things like that. They read in the Word. We've bought them an appropriate children's version. But we kind of give them rein to do whatever they would like. They even go through, you know, you can get those 365 flip days and you get a verse a day. They'll go through those. And, you know, so they go through a whole bunch of things. It takes a little bit more things for them to work through. And they can journal however they want. They can draw pictures. They can write verses. We just give them real free rein to do whatever they want. It's not a real structured time. We typically don't correct them even. You know, sometimes we'll, oh, here's another thought or whatever. The neighbor guys still come over some, so they sit with our kids. As the babies wake up in the morning, they just come down and kind of crawl on our lap. So typically, Steve's holding a kid and I'm holding a kid, and there might be some on the floor, but they're all just kind of quiet, but the babies are right with us. Nobody really leaves the room unless we need to discipline them. And so it's really worked out to be a pretty casual thing. I think one of the things that we value the most is just that every day the kids get to hear a little bit of our interpretation of the Word. They're hearing Dad say what Dad read and what Dad thought about the Word, and they're hearing me say that, and even the neighbor guys. And they'll even use the same terminology. We had a neighbor guy, and they'll use the same terminology as the adults, you know, and it's just cute. They're just imitating. They're imitating and learning how to process the Word. And even during the day, they'll come back and we'll talk about things. You know, something will come up in the day and it was from the morning or whatever. And so it's just been a real casual environment with not much structure, but it's worked well for our family. So it's just, I think you could probably do different things, but that's worked well for our family. The little Malia, she's 4, and she, of course, can't read, so she just comes down and sucks her thumb the whole time. And then everyone goes around the room and shares, and when it gets Malia's turn, she's at the very end, she says, well, I was thinking about a bus today. And, of course, all the kids go, oh, Malia. And she shares Romans 3:23 every day, and she'll say, did I get my bus, Mom? Did I do it by myself, Mom? And we'll say, yeah. And so then we just go do breakfast. But she knows to share. She knows that that's her point where she shares, and the kids kind of tease her and, oh, Malia, you know. But she's 4 years old, and she knows that there's a point to share, and she's listening to the Word. And I don't know what kind of imprint that's going to have on the babies, but the babies are all right there too.
A few years ago, I heard Bill Young speak on an accountability program that he was doing, and it was with some other pastors. He was accountable to pray for an hour a day and read his Bible for 30 minutes a day and to memorize a verse a week. And then there were a few other odds and ends in there, but those were kind of killers. And I heard that. It's like, you know, you go to a conference, it's like, yeah, that's really good. I should do that. And we tried to implement something similar in our church, but didn't really do it wholeheartedly, and nothing really came of it. And then maybe a year and a half ago, I started thinking about it again. I can't remember if we spoke on it again or what, but it kind of stirred me a little bit. It's like, I should do that, but my flesh is just not ready. And I knew that once you start something like that, you can't really get out of it. Because, you know, you enter into this accountability, and then, you know, what, as a pastor, what am I supposed to do? Well, I decided, you know, prayer is just I really don't feel like prayer is my thing. I mean, it's, I knew once I started I was toast. So I really thought about it real seriously. And then we heard Bill speak on it again at, I think, last summer's pastor's conference. And several of us in the church got kind of excited about it. And so Perry Paulding, my co-pastor, and Doug Dale and Brian Lee and myself all started this accountability thing. And it was really hard at first, but you know, after a few months, it's like, wow, this is the most life-changing thing we've ever done. And this is having this huge impact on us. And so, of course, once you are changed like that, you think, well, everybody else should do this too. And so so we wanted to do something for our leaders. And so we pulled together our leadership group, and we came up with this plan. It's a little bit scaled down. We call it 2020. And the idea is to spend 20 minutes in the Word and 20 minutes in prayer. And some other things, you have to memorize a verse a week. And meet one new person at church each week. And so we introduced this to them, and I had to really think about doing my accountability, so I presented it as, hey, you can sign up for it if you want. You don't have to. We're not forcing you to do these things. But we think it'd be really good for you, especially as a leader, to be, you know, you need to be in the Word. You need to be being spiritually fed. And this is one way of accomplishing that if you think this would be helpful. So I encourage them, you know, you think about this, and you think about it for a few days, and then get back to me and let me know if you want to be a part, and then we'll set up some groups. And my son was sitting in the audience along with Joshua Dale. My son, again, is 12, and Josh is 10. And he was the first one to come up to me after the meeting, and he goes, I'm in. And it's like, okay, you know, you don't want to set him up for failure. It's like, I don't know if you're really ready for this. And so, well, okay, we'll see how it goes. And, well, you know, they started doing it, and just like everyone else, they struggled at first some, but pretty soon they're doing pretty well, and then they started asking all their little friends to do it. Now they have this group of, I don't know, it's maybe six kids.
Six boys.
Six kids, plus some in Fort Collins. And mm-hmm. So there's maybe eight or so total that are doing these accountability goals together. And I don't know how well they're doing, but they're doing more than I did at, you know, 10 to 12 years old. So it's kind of exciting to see this and to see it spreading. And they've got this little group, and they'll meet with them after church, and they'll pray together. These little kids. Joshua Dale actually comes up, again, this is a 10-year-old, has this little sheet of everybody's phone number, and he figured this out on the computer. And it's weird because these kids are learning how to lead their peers. And it's kind of a freaky type thing, but of course, as soon as he started doing it, then Silas wanted to do it, and Hopi wanted to do it, so our 12-year-old's doing it, and our 10-year-old, and our 8-year-old, and they don't do the 20 minutes, I think they're maybe 15 and 10 or something like that, but boy, it's just exciting to see them in the Word and involved in that way.
One of the things we don't let our kids do too much is talk on the phone, and there was a Saturday night, and Blaise said, well, I need to call Joshua to ask him how he did on his accountability, and I'm like, Blaise, you know, do you really need to use the phone? You know, we tried to discourage that, and he's like, well, I need to call him and ask about his accountability. I was slightly irritated. I'm like, and then Hopi decided she needed to call her accountability person. Of course, Siley needed to call his accountability person on a Saturday night, and I'm like, okay, and so I went upstairs, and I was kind of fussing, and Steve, we were getting ready for bed, and just the Lord just struck me. I'm like, wait a second. We never had a conversation with the kids about discipling others. We didn't think we were at that point yet. So we weren't talking to them about imparting to their friends. So like Joshie and Blaze's little accountability group is all boys. It's about six boys, 10 to maybe 12 to 10 to 8 years old. And I was just so humbled by what God had done, because our kids had a heart to disciple and to reach out and to encourage these other kids. Without, we were clueless. Like, you can tell we're late on the draw. Like, the kids come first, and we go, nah, I don't think so. And they go, okay, well, we'll try. And, you know, God blesses it. I mean, we're always a little late on the draw on what the kids, where they're at or whatever. But it's just been a tremendous blessing just to see them imitate that. And they don't do it perfectly, but they understand that you take your friends and you try to encourage them, and it's an encouraging thing to have some accountability, and it's an encouraging thing to ask how you're doing and reading the Word and memorization and things like that. And so the other day, Steve was coming up to the house, and the neighbor boy was coming around the corner, and Steve said, "Hey, Josh," our neighbor boy's name is Josh, "Hey, Josh, what's up?" And he said, "I need to talk to Blaze." And they don't have a lot of contact. In the summertime, our backyards share, so they'll play a little bit in the summertime, but it's winter, it's school, their kids do school, and so we haven't had a lot of contact lately. And so we hadn't seen him for a while. He might be saved. He's definitely heard the gospel a couple times at a couple different our church events, but we're not really sure where he's at. But he was really bothered. In the last summer, the boys had talked about, the boy was listening to Kiss and some real intense AC/DC, which I hardly know what this is, but Kiss and AC/DC and real intense music, and he had had a really terrifying nightmare about it, and he wanted to talk to Blaze because Blaze had shared some verses with him, and he couldn't find him, and he wanted to talk to Blaze. So like within minutes, Blaze has the Bible open and sharing with them. And you know, we're not gifted in evangelism. We have a heart for it, but we're not gifted in evangelism. And so it was just wild to see this. And then he came out to the kitchen. He said, "Well, can I ask Josh to be in my accountability group?" We're like, "Okay, buddy. You're gonna ask him to pray for 20 and read for 20. I don't even know if there's a Bible in that home." And he's like, "Yeah." And Steve and I are, of course, dumbfounded, you know, okay. And so he asked Josh to be in this accountability group. We don't even think Josh is saved. And so now we got to figure out how we're going to do that and how we're going to encourage and figure that out. But the mom has told us next door that she really doesn't have spiritual answers for her kids. And that she's actually asked for input. So it's just kind of a God thing all over the place, just how that's worked. It's not been us. We haven't done a great job of reaching out to these people by any means, but it's just been the Lord's kind of opened that door. And this boy is just really spiritually interested. He has a lot of questions. And so it's been a wonderful opportunity for our son just to stir that pot a little bit at the beginning.
Yeah, and I don't want you guys to get the impression that our kids are little saints. We have bad stories we can tell, too.
In every area.
We went to a wedding 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was Jeff Weeman and Grace Whitney's wedding. Well, it got to the time where they feed each other the cake. And, well, they did it real politely, so it's kind of a big letdown. Because you wanted to be a little bit more excited about it. And Blaze watched the whole thing, and it got all done, and he comes up to me and says, "Dad, at my wedding, I'm just going to step back and wing it." So, it's not necessarily that our kids are little angels. Relationship is very key in our house. See, in Colossians 3:13, or let's start on 12, says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." And in that verse, it talks about compassion and kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, forgiveness. But it says that love binds all those things together. And we feel like that's the way love works in our home. It's kind of the glue that makes everything work. You know, one of the first things I learned in this movement of churches is, I probably learned it 20 to 22 years ago, and it stuck with me, was that when you correct someone, you should encourage them more than you correct them. And in parenting, that's hard to do. Because we're not going to talk a lot about discipline, but at home, boy, we are disciplining, we're correcting all the time. We're constantly saying, "Okay, you need to do this," or "You didn't do that, you didn't respond right." And we're constantly correcting. So we're very careful to be constantly being affirming them and loving them, communicating that we're proud of them, and that they belong, and that they're a part. In your home, it's critical to have that environment of love. And Kath and I, we hardly have an interaction with our children that doesn't communicate love in some way. So every time I walk by them, you know, just even if I'm just passing through the kitchen or something, I'll wink or I'll pat them on the head or rough up their hair or punch them in the shoulder or, you know, do something to say I love you. If not the words, which we say more than once a day. And so we are constantly trying to create this atmosphere of love. We talk about our quiet times that we have every morning. Our kids are anxious to be a part of those. When I wake them up in the morning, A lot of times they're already up, but if they're not, I just go and I shake them, and once they kind of sit up and acknowledge that they heard me, then we're done. I leave the room, and they get out of bed. I never go back a second time, or very rarely, because they want to be with us. They want to be there. And if they miss, if they, after that first time, I go to wake them up, if they fall back asleep, and they wake up 30 minutes or an hour later, they'll be disappointed that they missed that time. Why? Because they love God so much and they love the Word so much? Well, that's part of it. But a big part of it is they want to be with us. They want to be with us. They want to be sitting in that room with us, spending that time with us. And that's the atmosphere of love that we're trying to create. And eventually, as they do that, they will do it out of a heart for God. But we understand right now they're doing it out of a heart for just wanting to be with their family. Also with the accountability that we're doing. You know, why were they so excited to do that? Well, you know, they sat through the talk, it was exciting, and they wanted to do great things for God. That's part of it, but it's also mom and dad are doing this. I want to do what mom and dad are doing. Because I want to be a man of God or a woman of God like they are. And so all that relates to that atmosphere of love. So we're always very careful to give attention to our relationship with the kids.
Okay, in the area of dialogue, one of the things that we've tried to do just in our home is take the Word and make the Word really, really simple and practical on a daily basis. So we try to take just simple verses and pull out little tiny phrases and teach the kids that in their relationships or in their communication or if there's a conflict or whatever. So we're just trying to pull out these little tiny verses to help them get a God perspective in their life. So to help them apply the Word and know what the Word means and understand the Word and remember the Word and how it means on a daily basis. So one of them that we use is, we just call it 429 speech. And we'll just say to the kids, are you using 429 speech? They know exactly what that means. That's Ephesians 4:29. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up. So, of course, kids have a lot of interaction that's not building others up, right? So we just, instead of saying, hey, knock that off, don't speak that way, we just use, are you using 429 speech? Is that 429? And they know that. They can quote the verse back. Is that helpful for building others up? So that's just an example of where we're trying to take the Word and make it really, really simple. They'll never forget it. They know what 429 speech is because we use it every day in our home. Another example is, you know, we've all been taught that when the kids have conflict, well, one says I'm sorry and the other one says I forgive you, right? Well, we tagged on, I forgive you as the Lord forgave me, which comes out of Colossians 3:13. The reason that we did that, again, was to set a worldview for the kids. It's one thing to say, I forgive you. It's another to every single time that happens, which it happens all day long, right? Because they're working things out all day long, is to remember the Lord has also forgiven me. And so that's really important to us. That's one of the things that we want the kids to remember. The Lord has also forgiven you. So it's just a standard in our home. I forgive you as the Lord forgave me, instead of just I forgive you based on that verse. So we're kind of intentionally trying to take the Word and so that they remember. Of course, they know that verse too. 1 Thessalonians 4. I'll just say, make it your ambition, and they say to lead a quiet life and to mind your own business. And to mind your own business has become a big deal. As the kids have gotten older, they want to give input into the younger kids. That gets real messy real fast. We're still working. I'm sorry. 1 Thessalonians 4:15, I think. Is it 15?
Sure.
It's 15. I think it's 15. But make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and to mind your own business. So a lot of times the kids will give input into one of the other kids' life and it's not their business, right? They're basically wrong either in their timing or their wording or something. And so we're trying to teach them, you know, there's a point where you need to mind your own business and to have that discernment of how that happens. So instead of saying, hey, knock it off and leave your brother or sister alone, we're taking that verse and we're saying, make it your ambition, and they end the verse so every time they know that verse kind of in their head.
4:11,
okay.
Tattling too?
Yeah.
Tattling on each other?
I act like this is a microphone. Oh, it is.
I don't know if we use a good So when they're tattling, they're not minding their own business. So yes, we use it for that.
We encourage tattling, though, for the most part. I mean, we do. Because we don't want it to an environment where things are going on without us knowing it. So for the most part, we encourage tattling. Is that right? Okay. I'm frustrated with you for a moment. So, you know, a lot of times when you're interacting with the kids and there's a conflict, the kids know you're frustrated, right? And, you know, in the world, or kind of, I always thought that you're supposed to hide your frustration. If they say, are you frustrated? You're supposed to say, no, I'm okay. But you're really about ready to kill him, right? Well, we came up with, you know, one time the Lord just struck me that in the Word it says, I'm frustrated with you for a moment, but my favor lasts for a lifetime with you. So we'll say that to the kids when we're in a dialogue and it's a frustrating experience. We'll say, hey, I'm frustrated with you right now, but how long does my favor last?
Psalm 35.
It lasts for a lifetime. And so we're saying that constantly to them. My favor lasts for a lifetime for you. And again, it's just, you know how that can get? You're interacting with them all the time and fussing with them all the time, and it can kind of be like your relationship is all about correcting and there's nothing positive going on with them. The kids need to hear that. They need to hear, my favor lasts for you a lifetime. I'm frustrated with you a moment, but my favor lasts a lifetime. So those are just some examples where we've just taken little clips or little easy things from the Word and tried to put them into their conversation and their thoughts so that they're thinking the Word and it's going through in their head during the day.
So we get into this. We've been doing a little website. It's called Premeditated Parenting. It's at premeditatedparenting.net. And with that, I try to send out a parenting email, theoretically once a week. That's what I try to do. It's more like once every other week now. But if you'd like to be on that email list, I'll pass out a sign-up sheet. And you can sign up for that. We'll put you on that list. But we just try to send out different thoughts on parenting or child discipline or verses that we've been learning or whatever structure that we've been using with the kids. Also, there's the website's listed there on your sheets. It's premeditatedparenting.net, and there's our Memory Madness link there if you'd like to learn more about that. Psalms 119:11 says, I've hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. And one of the things that we'd like to do is to equip our kids with the word to a degree that it's really impacting their life. And not where they just know, you know, a few little verses here and there, but where they really know a lot of Scripture, and they really know it well. And we have been using this program. It's called Memory Madness. It started in our church, and so again, it's one of those things we kind of stumbled into. We were just going to have some of the kids in music club learn 10 gospel verses. And we started off with those 10 gospel verses, and you know, we got partway through those, and it's like, hey, this is pretty cool. These kids are doing this. This is fun. I can't remember what we were doing at first, getting them stickers or something. And I thought, well, we should do another 10. And so we did another 10, and it's like, well, we should make this whole program out of this. And over time, what we've done is come up with this memory program, and it's targeted. And initially, what we were thinking is kids from 5 to 12, and we were thinking of all these things that we would like to pass on to our kids, basically. And so the verses include a lot of things from the topical memory system or from the outreach class or the old PGT verses or the ones that are in the Life Now series books. It's a lot of those verses thought through different areas of, you know, childhood obedience to things that, you know, specific things. I really want my kids to be strong in grace, or I really want them to have a understanding of the importance of the word. And so there are different sets of verses that are specific to those groups. And so there's, right now we have 21 sets of verses, because I did my math wrong, there should have been 24, but there is targeted for those age groups. And by the time they get to the end, we want to be learning stuff that will help prepare them for the teenage years. And so it'll, you know, have more verses on, you know, honoring your parents and sexuality and stuff like that. And so we think that's been a really key thing for our kids. The program has expanded into the church where the adults are doing it now too, which is really cool, because then you got parents and kids learning verses alongside each other, just like I talked about with our quiet times or with our accountability programs. When we're doing it with them, that makes it so much more exciting and so much more fun to do. And so we've actually got more adults in our church doing it now than we have kids. And I think, I can't remember, it's like 70% participation in the church, roughly, something like that. And so on the website, that link will tell you a little bit more about the program. And if you're interested in starting that in your church, then you can contact me and I can send you some more information. A lot of it's all laid out and just ready to go. It's easy, it's simple, it doesn't take a lot of manpower to run it. And so I would encourage you to try to get that going in your church, and you can just walk up to your pastor and say, hey, can we start this? And I would be glad to be the point person. I'd be glad to make this happen. And I'm sure they'd be excited about that. But our 6-year-old now, before she turned 6, she knew 50 verses. And when I say she knew them, I mean she really knew them. Because they have to, what we call it, mad smashing. To do that, they have to say them in groups of 10. So it's not like you can just go cram real quick and then go say your verse. And so before she turned 6, she knew 50 verses word for word with no more than one word missed per verse. And she did it. She got those down cold. And it's not because she's just amazingly smart, because I can't remember who's all here, but a couple of your kids have done the same thing. Before they became 6, they already knew 50 verses. And so by the time, before she hits her teen years, just learning 30 verses a year, before she becomes a teenager, she can know 270 verses. And at 30 a year, that's easy. That's, people don't like it at first because it's like, oh, this is moving too slow. Yeah, but over time, what it does is it builds a framework for their belief system. Because we know certain things are true from the Word, and then we kind of add on things that we believe about the world onto that framework. What we want to do through this program is develop a framework for those kids of, boy, I know a lot of things that are true because this is exactly what the Bible says, and I know it says this, and then their whole belief system starts getting built around this framework of Scripture. Just one more thought on that is just, you kind of go back to that verse in Deuteronomy that I shared at the beginning. We have the first 100 verses on CD. And so we'll play that CD while the kids are cleaning up from supper or something. Or when they go down to bed, they'll put that CD on, and I'll come down at 6 o'clock in the morning, and those verses are still going. And it's Kathleen and I's voice, so it's kind of cool for them. It's kind of comforting because Mom and Dad are talking to them all night long. But we're, you know, honestly, it sounds bizarre, but it's like we're trying to do everything that we can to build into these kids. And unfortunately, if you put the CD on, they won't hear your voice, they'll hear mine. So that probably won't be quite as comforting to your kids.
When Josh was over and Blazy was sharing with them, the other kids were cleaning up in the kitchen, and Blazy said it was very distracting because Siley was going, 1 Peter 3:18, for Christ died for sins once for all. And he said he was just, because the CD was going in the kitchen, and all the kids, they can't talk when they clean up. They can just quote the verses because they're learning the verses. So we put on 1 through 100, and they just run through them. But they all say them, and it gets pretty loud. And, of course, he's trying to talk to Josh, and so nothing like pressuring the poor neighbor kid into verse land. But it has been a real blessing, and the kids really enjoy it. There's a lot of review in the program, so it doesn't get overwhelming to them. They feel like they can accomplish it. They feel like they know the word because it's just review, review, review. And so they're feeling pretty good about that. The next one is making daily life challenging, and that's a real goal for us. We really, truly try to make it miserable at home. We do. We try to make it very challenging. Our thought behind that is anything that they can wrestle out and work out in our home environment where they're loved and they're supported, then they don't have to work it out in the world. And so we intentionally try to make life pretty miserable. I read somewhere, I can't remember where I read this, but it said, either you cry now or I cry later. And so that's my mommy verse, and they need to cry now so that I'm not crying later. It needs to hurt a little bit on a daily life. Yeah. Yeah. Although it's scripture to me. Yeah. So we're trying to develop their character through hardship in the home, through responsibilities and through school. Romans 5:3-4 says, not only so, but we also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, character, and character hope. And so with our kids in our home, we've made a year-round checklist schedule that each kid has, and they have to hand that in order to get supper. And so it's kind of their ticket to supper, and it has everything on it. It has their quiet time, their prayer, their school, their chores. It could even have, in summertime, it might have things like reading to a sibling or things like that. We kind of shake it up a little bit, but the kids are always on a structure. They're always on a schedule. On Saturday, they're on a schedule. And the reason is that we feel like that more imitates a daily adult life. A daily adult life needs to have structure and responsibilities. And so our goal is to try to make them get a handle on that and work toward that. And of course, it's a struggle at times, but we make it challenging enough that it pretty much takes them most of the day to accomplish their list. They have very little free time. They have about a half hour to an hour right after lunch, and then they have, depending on how their day went with school, they might have some time in the evening. And it takes a lot of work, but we've really tried to make it that way to teach the kids, this is life. This is how life works. You need to enjoy your schedule and what you're doing because this is how life is. And they actually do get to a point where they really enjoy it and it's not a burden. It has things on there like piano practice and take care of the bunny and, you know, it has everything on there depending on the age appropriate. But we try to keep them on a schedule pretty much year-round. We use cleanup, like, for example, cleanup after meals. The kids have called it shoot the moon. They shoot the moon for gum. And we just have a whole bunch of sugar-free gum in there. And if they do it in 10 minutes, literally the whole thing, totally spotless, they get gum. And that works really well for them. For some reason, they love gum. So that works really well, and we don't have a problem with that, although we're getting into braces. But great expectations. Steve's going to talk a minute about school, but we've realized that the kids, they aren't brilliant by any means. They have us for parents. But with a little effort, they can get A's. With no effort, they can get B's. We know that about the kids. And so the goal, you have to get an A. And I know that probably sounds crazy. They have to get A's. And if they don't get A's, it's a serious deal. And the reason, again, is that we know what they're capable of. And they can easily get a B. It's not a problem to get a B, and it takes effort to get an A. And so we've just pushed them that you have to get A's. And, of course, Blazy's realizing that the whole world doesn't have to get A's, so he's slightly irritated. Well, I know other people who don't have to get A's, and we're like, well, that's fine. Others may, but you may not. You have to get an A, you know? And it's just because we know... We know what they can do. We know what they're capable of. The best tool we've ever had is spelling. I'm a brilliant speller. My husband is not, and all the children take after him. And none of the kids can spell at all. And so we've just made spelling miserable for them. They have to get an A+. They can't get one wrong. That was this summer, on the summer schedule. And, you know, the first time really made him work really hard. And by the end of the summer, Blaze, which he spells horrible, they all spell horrible. But Blaze, which he is not a good speller at all, he was getting A+ consistently by the end of the summer, like 6 weeks in a row. And that was just because he learned how to study. He learned how to do it. How do you take a list of 30 verses and figure out what that means? How do you remember it? The kids have to do daily. So the idea is that they can't do an A on spelling if they don't do it daily. That's the trick. If they don't practice it daily, they can't get an A. So we leave it to them, and so half the time they're failing because they don't do it daily. And so when it comes time for spelling tests, they bomb it, and there we go again. And the idea is, okay, what would it have taken to get an A if I would have daily done it? Well, it's okay except for the weekends. And the weekends, they take off. We don't rescue them. We don't stop them. Tuesday morning is our beginning of our school week, and we do the spelling test first thing out, and they bomb it. It's like, did you practice this weekend? Nope. Okay, back to the drawing board. And again, we love them to pieces. We care about them. We hug them. We don't cry with them. They cry. But we care about them deeply. But this is what we feel like our home environment is the best for them, is to really try to help them, equip them for daily life and responsibility and things like that.
Yeah, so just back to the verse again. Now that so we rejoice in our sufferings, we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, character hope. And so that's why we do that. We're pushing on them to try to develop their character. Because you can't develop the character just by memorizing verses. You can't do it just by reading books. You can't do it just by talking to them. It's making the right choices through hardship. That's how character is developed. And so what we're doing is introducing hardship into their lives and then helping them make the right choices through that. So we're truly not just trying to be mean. And in our home, you know, the kids are very fun-loving. They're easy to get along with. They get along with others well. And so I don't want you to get the feel that we're just tyrants. At least I'm not. No.
Yeah.
Ephesians 6:4 says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Dads, this is something that you've been charged with by God, to bring your kids up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And you need to be creative in thinking about, okay, how am I going to do that? How am I going to pass on these important truths? How am I going to get them to think about life? And so we've used a number of different tools to try to help them. One is we use our homeschool. I don't like to talk about homeschool actually publicly because it's such a divisive issue and it can seem like, oh, the only way you can do is homeschool. I don't believe that. It's not the only way you can do it. It's just the way that we do it. And since we're talking about our family, that's why I'm talking about this. But one of the things that we do in school is we have our kids, particularly in writing reports, we'll have them write reports that relate to real life things. And specifically spiritual things. Now, you know, every once in a while, you know, okay, write a report about how giraffes got long necks. And, you know, and then it'll be some funny story and creative writing type thing. It's not all Bible-based things, but we've also done ones like write a report on how to get saved using the first 10 Memory Madness verses. So they have to take these 10 verses that they know by heart really, really well, and they figure out, okay, how would I share my faith using just these verses? Blaze did that a couple weeks ago and did a great job. How would you share your faith with someone who didn't speak the same language? Well, then he's got to think about that. It's like, boy, that's really hard. And that serves a couple purposes. It's a little bit creative because you got to think through a story of, you know, what you might do in that situation. But it also makes you kind of think, well, maybe I should learn a foreign language because that would be pretty hard. And write a report on three ways you can know the Bible's true. Now for a kid 12 years old to be thinking through that, and now he's not going to be able to write, you know, a Josh McDowell type of answer to that, but he can come up with a few verses and a few different thoughts that he's heard here and there. But you know what it does is later on, he's already thought through this question, and as he reads through the Bible, and as he reads through different books that we've given him, well, now he'll find answers, and he'll be able to think, oh, I could have used this on that report, and I could have used this on that report. And that's the type of report we'll probably make him repeatedly do through the years. Some obvious ones, I guess, reports on Christian biographies or other Christian books that they read. We've had the kids do letters, just like write a letter to one of your friends. So Hope, one of her little friends, was discouraged, so she wrote out a letter. Well, and, you know, shared verses, and, oh, you might think about this verse and that verse. And she's learning how to encourage and doing school at the same time. Or Blaze has done some to, like, wrote a thank you letter to Tom Short on the book that he wrote and talked about what was important to him in that. And so learning how to do real life things. And so, okay, so let's say you don't homeschool. What do you do with that? Well, I think it's easy to think, well, we don't homeschool, so we really can't do that, and that's not really fair to talk about that, or, you know, kind of get defensive about it. But why can't you do that? Just add a class to their day. They come home from school and say, okay, guys, every day you get 30 minutes of homeschool. You get 30 minutes where I'm going to give you an assignment to do. Or maybe it's just once a week. And you can take that charge to train your children, and you can use the school system with that. Or you could take an assignment that they did at school, and you can say, okay, now I want you to redo this thinking about it in these terms. You can build into them in that way, and I think sometimes we can think, we almost think, oh, that's not fair. It's like we're robbing their childhood or something. No, you're giving them something. You're building into them. You're imparting truth into their lives. You're helping them learn how to think. You're shaping who they are. And that's really going to be valuable to them.
We only do that on writing. Like, we don't do 10 Bibles minus 9 Bibles equals, you know, one Bible. I mean, it's not like we make everything, you know, literally in school, it's pretty much writing, you know, maybe a little bit of writing papers and curts of practice, but it's not like we pound our heads to make everything, you know, in that world. But we try to take an opportunity. If they're going to write a paper, we just kind of punt our curriculum. We should have awesome curriculum, but we just kind of punt it and decide what we want them to write on. Because there are things that we want them to focus on. There are things that we want them to be processing. Even things that are going on in his life or her life. The next one is media. And so the idea here is that we kind of, it seems like maybe there are a lot of families that this is where they go lukewarm, is by the media that they allow in their home, right? And so we're real intentional on kind of our media choices in our home. We've invested a lot of money in certain books and videos and things like that just to impart a certain worldview to our kids. And our idea is, you know, sure, there can be some things in our home that aren't directly with a God view, but the majority for sure is. We try to really make it a majority, a heavy emphasis on what the Word would say in their little kids' videos and what they read and things like that. even in music. So for Hopi, she's 10, and for Christmas, the Paulding's gave us this idea. We took a little CD, a little 10 slot CD thing, and we got her all girl Christian music. So Point of Grace and Mercy Me. Is Mercy Me? Or, yeah, anyway, I see that tells you what I know. But we got them all girl music. And we put them in there with all the little girl pictures. And she loves Christine Short. That's her favorite rock star of all time, which is Tom Short's girl, and which we don't know her, but it's cute. And but just the idea is to help them fall in love with music and to fall in love with the right music. And there's so much out there now. I mean, our kids love that just because there's, you know, you can have all kinds of preferences and find it in the Christian world. So we really push heavily on just books. Like the TV, it's never on in our home at prime time ever. We just never have it on. It's just a constant godless voice in a home. And, of course, typically you don't say anything about it, but it's just that constant lukewarmness that's bringing into your kid's life. So the TV is just never on at night. It works out really well. There's just, they have a lot, they're finishing up their list anyway, so they don't need the TV.
If you've read some of Barna's stuff, and I think it's kind of a popular term right now in Christianity, there's just this concept of people have this worldview, and your worldview is what you believe about the world. Well, if you think of typical life outside of church, what you get, and if you think about media, is you get lots and lots of stuff with very, very little God. And so what happens is kids can get this view of the world that God is not really important. So sure, he's important at church, and maybe at home if you're doing a really good job at home, but he's certainly not important in the world because they read all these different books. And see, I think it's easy for us to get this mindset of, well, this book isn't bad because, well, it's not satanic. I mean, they're not worshiping the devil or anything. And so we can think a lot of what our kids see and read is not that bad. And I'll agree with you. It's not that bad. So, for instance, I don't care if my kid reads Huckleberry Finn. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is if all the books that he reads, that she reads, are like that. See the difference? So it's not that we're trying to keep them from any exposure to the outside world. We're trying to make sure that they have more exposure to things that include God than godless things. Not that Satan's being worshipped, but just God is absent or irrelevant. And so, you know, if your kids spend lots and lots of time reading just books from the library and Disney videos or whatever, not that each one is particularly bad in and of itself, but the culmination of them presents a worldview where God's not important. So that's why this is kind of important to us. It's one more story on that. 2 years ago, we were watching the Super Bowl. And we were watching the Super Bowl, and Janet Jackson came on. And I'm not a real big Jackson fan on either end. So I just walked out of the room. I didn't even really think anything of it. And Silas was sitting there, and he was 6 at the time. And he was watching this, and he watched, and it said, "She's dressed inappropriately." And went up and turned off the TV. Isn't that cool? Because they've just have been exposed to things, and they just know what's appropriate and what's not, and this is just not something that fits in our home. And even at 6, he knew that and shut off the TV. And so everybody missed it when she had her wardrobe malfunction. Okay, the last one there is just serving in the church. And this relates a little bit to home, a little bit not. But we want to build a heart into our kids where they are servants and where they're involved at church. And so we've had them get involved in some different aspects of serving. Ephesians 6:7 says, "Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men." And we want our kids to have that heart, and we want to be training that into them now, even at young ages. And so, for example, Hope, who is 10 now, she is involved in teaching, helper in one of the Sunday school classes, and she helps lead this little kid music. What grade is it she does?
3
years old?
Yeah.
So 3-year-olds, and she goes in and she teaches them little Christian songs and stuff, and she's all excited about it, and she'll practice, And one time she made these little crafts out of eggshell cartons, and they're supposed to be little lanterns. You know, she's putting time into this, and the little things didn't look anything like little lanterns. But it was really cute that she had that heart. And when it came time for the Christmas program last year, she was more excited to see her little kids up on stage than she was when she got to go up herself. And so it's that heart that we're trying to build into them. Blaze has been involved in doing the PowerPoint for our church, and he's done that for maybe a little over a year now. And so he does the slides during the worship, and he's on a rotation just like anybody else. And it was a little bit rough the first few times. We had a few crashes during worship.
Tears.
Yeah, tears, and it's hard because, you know, he'd mess up, and one of his little friends would come by after worship and say, "Wow, you really messed up, didn't you?" You don't think it's hard, but it is. And the worst one is I went back and tried to help him one time. It's like, I just really messed it up, and beyond recovery type of thing. But he had to take that stress and that blame, and he's learned how to do it, and now he's better than most PowerPoint operators, in my opinion. And PowerPoint's one of my pet peeves. It drives me crazy when it goes back and forth a bunch of times and stuff like that. So I'm particular about it, but he does a good job. But he's learned how to do that. You can email him the songs. He can pull the songs together. If the song's not there, he can figure out how to find the song and get the words and find a background and pull the whole thing together. And he's 12 years old. The reason we had him do it is because nobody would sign up for it. Nobody at church would sign up. It's like, well, my 11-year-old can do it, you know. So there was a little bit of a, I'm going to teach you guys a lesson. But he did. That's been a great thing, and we really want to encourage our kids to continue to serve. And even now, they're babysitting for one of the small groups. Polks live just down the street from us. And so they go down and they'll babysit, and they do get paid for that. They get $1 a night per kid. So that's if they do a good job. If they don't, then they don't get anything. So, and they're excited about that, and so it's great for the small group, and it's great for them. And it's really been a blessing. So those are just some of the things that we've seen in our home that have been, we feel like, have been really critical in shaping what we're doing. And we're really pleased with how the kids are doing so far. And again, it's not that we are perfect. We've got it all figured out or anything. But these things have certainly been helpful to us. And our kids all have areas that they need to grow in. We see different areas, and some of them we probably have blind spots and don't see. But just like us, you know, we're not perfect, and we're still growing, and we're still changing. But we do see that these things have really been shaping them, and we have hope and anticipation for what God is going to do with them in the future. So,
we can do questions.
You get another thought?
No, we can do questions.
Okay. Does anybody have any quick questions? Yeah.
They don't have anything to say? Why don't we have them talk on the phone? And they pretty much don't have anything to say. And there's, you know, if you listen to little children chat, there's not much they have to say. So we just eliminated it. I mean, if they pick up the phone, they say, "Hello, Nelsons, would you like to talk to my mom or my dad?" And that's all they say. And, you know, we have really good friends that try to coerce them into conversations and try to trick them into bad behavior. But we know who you are. And but now, yeah, it's kind of godless chatter. Yeah, they just don't have much to say. Now, though, with the accountability, there's purpose in their conversation. So now it's better. You know, it's although it does end up being kind of Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or, you know, it kind of goes that way. And so we still monitor it. But now there's some meaningful point to the conversation. So now it's a little bit different. But they don't call their friends at all.
Do you want an email?
Not yet. I've been trying to set up their email so that they can only get email from certain people, but I haven't quite figured out how to do that yet. So, in a way that doesn't mess with my email. Okay. How do we guard against pride with the accountability thing? Pride, the main thing is it's not like they're nailing it every time. So they're struggling along with their friends. And so that hasn't been so much of a problem. I'm trying to think other areas we've dealt with pride. we're definitely conscious of that. You know, Sunday school would be a good example. Blaze, when he was real little, we were really into, just like we're into Memory Madness now, we were into Bible trivia, and he really knew the Bible well. And he could really embarrass some Sunday school teachers. And so, you know, we had to tone him down and say, hey, you know a lot of things, but you need to learn a lot of things too, and you need to listen to your teacher. And, you know, you need to be careful not to answer every question and don't answer first. You know, just try to talk through that with him. I forgot the second question.
Consequences for not getting an A
is typically to do more work. And so they do their spelling, they prepare. Basically, we don't care that they get an A, we care that they study.
Yeah.
And if they study, they get an A. That's how that works. So if they don't study, then they don't get an A. And so what we do is we have them write through the spelling list and definitions 20 times, which is probably
5 hours.
5 hours of work. 5 hours of work.
It's very effective.
But we did that this summer, so now they just need to get an A. This summer they had to get 100%, or Blaze did. And he was the bad speller. So what it is, it forced him to learn how to study. Which, again, I'm the bad speller. I couldn't care less if he had learned how to spell. I mean, honestly, if you get close enough for the spell checker, that's good for me. But it's that learning the process of how to study, because that's what I really lacked that in college. So after my first year, I was on, you know, academic probation and getting ready to be kicked out of college because I wasn't doing well. I never learned how to study. I was the same way. I could get a B pretty easily in high school and stuff. But we're trying to impart those skills to them. Yeah, Dave?
Yeah, I just was wondering about, like you were saying earlier, you encourage tattling. How do you do that without, like, building a bunch of animosity around?
Yeah. Okay, so encouraging tattling, let's clarify that. What we don't want is secrets. We don't want a bunch of stuff happening that we don't know about. And so if one of the kids says, well, don't tell mom this, I mean, that's an automatic, they must tell mom. You know, we want very open communication of what's going on. Now, the aspect of tattling we don't like is when they're not minding their own business, when they're, you know, well, she ate 4 cookies and she didn't ask for any. Well, sometimes that might be appropriate, but sometimes it's like you're just trying to get her in trouble. And so that's, we try to just use discernment on which is which. We want to know what's going on. We want to know if one of the kids is about ready to ride down the steps in the stroller. You know, so we don't want to totally discourage it, but we don't want that thing where they're just trying to get each other in trouble. So a lot of it comes to the motive, and we just have to use discernment to try to figure out which is which. Yeah.
With all this structure and habit form, which I think is great, do you provide just goof around time so kids can just be kids? Is that part of the reward system?
Do we provide any goof around time in the midst of all that structure? Sure. So we'll, you know, like after quiet times, we've got, 30 minutes dead time or something before breakfast, and so I'll wrestle with the kids and play with them on the floor and tickle them and torment them and throw them up in the air and drop them on the couch and stuff like that. They have built-in time in their day, just like it's at regular school, public school. They have recess, and they'll go out and jump on the trampoline. So there is some free time, but it's limited free time. And then in the summer, there's still a schedule, but it is lightened up some. So instead of doing, you know, maybe 6 hours of school or 8 hours of school, whatever they're doing, they might do 2 hours of school, just enough to kind of keep them fresh and stuff.
One of the things on that is we've kind of gotten to a point where we don't have any hobbies outside of the kids. We pretty much do everything with the kids. So even usually everyone's working at the same time and everyone's doing family time at the same time too. So there is a lot of every day after breakfast is family hangout time. Every day after lunch is family hangout time. And then usually after dinner is family hangout time. And sometimes if they've done well for the day, the evening is somewhat free too. But Steve works out of the home. He's home 95% of the time, and so we do pretty much everything with the kids, and I think that helps a little bit. It's not like the whole day is this burden schedule. There's time in that day to interact.
With that, I work a lot of hours every week too, though. So I don't want you to get the feel of, oh, we're in a totally different circumstance than you are. Now, I'm still working a lot. Now, I do have a more flexible schedule than most of you. but it is still a lot of work. So it is still hard to manage that and to spend enough time with the family, just like it is with everyone else. So, yeah.
I got a question tied to that. Do your kids participate in any kind of like organized sports like soccer?
Yeah. Do our kids participate in any kind of organized sport like soccer? Blaze started soccer when he was
six or seven.
And we went to that and took him to practice and sat there with him and realized the amount of commitment it was. And we realized we weren't going to be able to do it fairly. Because just with the number of kids that we had, we could not commit that much time to sports. And so that was his last year, that one, and no one's gone back. And so for us, it was kind of a strategic thing of, we can't invest this much time in athletics. Now, I think there's value in it. I think just like that character verse about how you learn character through hardship, I think sports can help teach that. I think there are a lot of good things in sports, but for us, it just wasn't going to work. And so that's why we've discouraged that. I think as they get into high school, you know, they may be able to pick a sport. We honestly haven't really thought through it a whole bunch. For me, I feel a little bit like, well, I didn't start sports until I was in eighth grade, and I turned out okay. You know, you know what I mean? Because it seems like more and more they're pushing kids to start earlier and earlier, and we have other things on our agenda. Maybe my kid won't be the soccer star because he didn't start at such a young age, but I'm okay with that. So.
Well, along the same lines would be like scouting, you know, boys, girls, girls.
Yeah. So scouting or things like that.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing. We still have the time. We know a family that's really involved in scouting. They make that their ministry. He's a scout leader, and he shares his faith with the kids, and it is really their thing, and it works in their family, and it's great. But it's just not our life. It's not what we're doing. They've chosen one path, and we're choosing a different, and I think it's worked well in both situations. So I think we're out of time here. We should probably wrap it up. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this time. God, again, just I pray that people wouldn't feel overwhelmed or have too high of expectations or anything. God, I know we're not doing everything perfect. God, we're just stumbling along and you're laying stuff in our lap. And I just praise you for how you've blessed our family and continue to teach us. And God, I pray that just each person would have that heart to just implement what they can and just gradually make changes and run their family in a way that's just honoring to you. And God, we pray that you would really guard our kids, God. We all have fears about our kids not turning out, fears about them rebelling and turning against you. God, we don't want that. And we want to do everything that we can to help. We want to do everything that we can to help direct them and guide them. And even to equip them, even if they do turn away, God, that we would have equipped them for everything they need to help them make the best choices then and to turn back to you. And so, God, we just pray that you bless each of our families. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you.